Hello and welcome to the True Blue LA podcast. And you know, spring training is here when Eric Steven is popping the champagne after a spring training tie.
Yeah, I jokingly said we're recording this on Wednesday. Tuesday, the Dodgers tied in Scottsdale against the Giants. And I said, oh, crap, I'm out of champagne. But then I forgot I have leftover champagne from New Year's, but it wasn't in a bottle. It was in like a regular plastic cup that I forgot about. So I did actually have champagne after the tide. So, yeah.
So spring training is here. We've got kind of a lot of odds and ends, but the main thing, we do this every year, guessing the opening day roster episode.
Yep, we're going to make fools of ourselves. There's a few ins and outs we'll talk about as to why this will be. This could be weird compared to like a normal year, and we'll get into why. So looking forward to it.
We'll get into that. There's questions from Craig. There's a Dodgers rewind. I just checked. There is. Well, they're going to do that. All of that after this.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I think there was like 1 year where we were going to be right about the roster, and then like Clayton Kershaw got hurt. And we're like, no, screwed it up.
Yeah, I think, I'm trying to think. I don't remember. We must have done this last year. But like, just so if you're thinking about last year.
That doesn't count.
Well, but like, I was going to say, had we done it in July, I think we did. I think we did. But like, if you had picked Clayton Kershaw on the opening day roster, technically you were correct because he was on the opening day roster. And then they put him on the injured list like later in the day. So like that would have counted. But yeah, it's a little weird. It's not quite last year. It's not expanded rosters, but there's still some quirks. So yeah, that'll throw a wrench into it. So it's been like a relatively like normal spring so far. I took last week off, which was cool. I was on Twitter because I'm addicted, but like I was generally offline. Like I didn't go into any comment section. I didn't open Slack except for one time because I had to DM someone. So that was actually a nice time off. But like as far as the Dodgers, like it's been like relatively normal. There's a few things. What I was figuring we're gonna do as we go through. Our guess is for the roster, if there's a little bit of news on someone, I was planning to sort of bring it up as we talk about each player. But there really hasn't been, like, off the top of my head, like, any, like, major, like, news stories in terms of the roster. The one thing that'll throw a wrench into what we're doing here is just yesterday, Major League Baseball... as was their right under like the agreement with the players. So the initial minor league rosters came out and they sort of split spring training into like majors and roughly AAA. And then after those people are done, then AA and the two Class A leagues will head to spring training for a month because their season starts in May. Triple A season was going to start in April. Now they Major League Baseball pushed it back to May. So What that means is for players who don't make the roster, there's no the Major League roster, there's no AAA for them to go to for a month. So they're going to bring back the alternate sites. The Dodgers haven't yet decided if they're going to use Rancho Cucamonga or Camelback Ranch as their alternate site. I would imagine they'll use Rancho only because they could definitely use Camelback Ranch, but the issue is one of the main issues that MLB was concerned about is, you know, the general thought is perhaps by May, most people or more people will be vaccinated. Maybe the players will be vaccinated. You don't want to have the risk like in April where you have everyone sort of going through the testing protocols. And then you call up a guy who has to take a commercial flight to get to you from AAA. And then that like throws a loop into, you know, throws a wrench into everything. So it's less, maybe it's less risky if you start that process in May. So I think they're going to try to keep the alternate site closer rather than have it in Camelback. Although last year there was a couple instances where I believe Tony Gonsolin for one of his call-ups and maybe a couple other people, they like rented a car or like were picked up and drove from Arizona to Los Angeles. So maybe that's what they do. I don't know. It's kind of weird. But so what that does is throws a little bit of a wrench, like whereas some of the players we're going to talk about who might have gotten sent down, if they don't have anywhere to pitch or play, maybe it's more likely they're going to end up on the major league roster, to at least for the first month, especially in a season where the early part of the season, pitchers generally aren't as stretched out anyway. But also you're coming off of a season of 60 games and you're going to 162, so you're going to try to get innings wherever you can. So I think that'll throw into a wrench into it. This year there's 26-man rosters. The plan going into last year before the world ended was to have a 13-pitcher limit, but there's no 13-pitcher limit now, so it could teams can sort of structure the rosters how they want. They have to carry at least 8 position players because otherwise they would forfeit or have, you know. But to my knowledge, no team has done the 18-pitcher roster just yet, but I'm not putting it past anyone to try. So,
and if anyone, the Dodgers.
Yeah. So I wrote down my opinion of the locks. I was conservative in a couple of these, and perhaps not. I should list a couple others as locks, but we'll get into why. If you disagree with any of these, let me know, and we will.
There's only one name I wanted to kind of note, but I agree with this.
So for right now, catchers, like probably the most obvious group right now, Will Smith, Austin Barnes, pretty obvious. Those are the two. Starting pitchers in some order, Kershaw, Bueller, Bauer, David Price, and Julio Urias. And then for the bullpen, I have just as locks, I think I could probably go at least one more lock, but more lock. So Jansen, Trinan, Corey Knebel, Joe Kelly, and Bruiser Greaterol.
And we'll talk about it after, because I have one other name that I think is a lock, but we'll talk.
I think I agree with you, even though I don't know.
It'd be really funny if you have two different names in mind.
Yeah. Well, then that's sort of the fun of this. Yeah. Like, and then so for the infield again, there's probably another lock that I'm leaving out, but for a reason. Max Muncy, Chris Taylor, Corey Seager, Justin Turner, and Edwin Rios.
Yeah, I think Edwin Rios was the only name that was a little surprising to me, that he, like, I agree, like, he was going to make my roster no matter what, which is the definition of a lock. But it's interesting that he's come that far. Good for him.
Yeah, exactly. And then the outfield, some guy named Mookie Betts. Cody Bellinger, the only caveat here is that it's possible he could start the year on the injured list. I don't, like, there... everyone seems to think that he's going to be ready for opening day. He's not going to play in games till like next week or not actually like 2 weeks, March 15th or so, because he's coming off shoulder surgery. It was late until the offseason until he actually swung a bat. He's been going through like workouts and things like that. So he's not been like totally down or anything. It's just, I don't think he's not going to see game action till like the 15th. So just have it as a caveat there. And then AJ Pollock as the other one. So that leaves, that's 20 players. So we have to come up with the other six. Do you agree with those 20? I know you,
nope. I wanted to kind of note Rios that I find it interesting that he was.
Yeah.
And we'll start here. I find it like that Edwin Rios is a lock, but Gavin Lux isn't.
Right.
And I agree with you. The logic makes sense, but.
Yeah. The only reason I just think because Rios's role is more defined exactly. In that it's like, you know, he's not a starter. He's an occasional starter, like probably filling in for Justin Turner, you know, and doing a lot of pinch hitting.
And who knows, maybe he can Justin Turner himself this year, where that's totally what we said about Justin Turner, you know, six, 7 years ago. But
So Gavin Lux should probably be a lock. And because Dave Roberts sort of talked about this the other day, he used the phrase, we're going to give Gavin Lux a runway at second base. And they've used that before, like the last few years, whether it's Andrew Friedman or Dave Roberts or talking about like opening up rotation spots for Urias, Gonsolin, and May, or like Will Smith at catcher. They've used it in the past. I want to say like Cody Bellinger maybe got used them.
I don't know if it was that phrase, but Kike got that, and then obviously it didn't turn out so well.
Right. but it's a phrase they use when they're going to give someone playing time, like right. Basically. and the reason I didn't list Lux as a lock is because I think for him, he's either he's going to play like mostly every day somewhere, right? And like, so if he doesn't make the major league team,
right. Guess it.
And Robert said this the other day before the AAA season got delayed.
Exactly. That I wonder if that wrinkles it at all.
So I think if anything, that strengthens Gavin Lux's chances of making the roster. I think he's going to get the lion's share of playing time at second base. And then you'll see like, Chris Taylor
do the moving Chris Taylor into thing,
the, right? And also, Roberts mentioned that he would have. He's not opposed to using Lux filling in for Seager on days off, short. So, but also, you know, Chris Taylor will do that. Chris Taylor has been working a little bit at third, and you know he's going to play like left and probably center, especially if they need to give like Bellinger days off or something early. So. We've learned with Chris Taylor, it doesn't really matter who starts where. He's going to get his playing time somehow. Like, so I'm not too worried about that. We both agree. So Lux is our 21st player that we both agree on. I'm going to keep it on the bench for now.
Okay.
Since we're at, what is that? That's 11 position players. So I think in my head, I think that they would go 12 position players, 14 pitchers.
That's what I was considering. And there's a couple of names for this final bench spot.
Yeah. And so like, it really comes down to like, you know, they obviously like the versatility. If you're going versatility, Zach McKinstry's probably that guy. AJ Pollock over the weekend, I believe, I think his quote was he can flat out rake about Zach McKinstry. Everyone kind of raved about him, but they raved about him last year too, and they barely played him. So, but also there was less opportunities. This year there's more opportunities because they traded Kike and there's no Jock. So like, you know, there's more playing time to be had. I think so. It's like him. Matt Beatty is probably the other most likely option, but he's a little more limited in that he's really only mostly corner infield and a little maybe in left field or something. The new guy, Sheldon Noisy.
Yeah,
he's basically third and first, but also maybe. less advanced of a hitter at this point. I don't know. Like, it's hard to say. With no minor league season last year, it's really weird to, like, fully sort of grasp it. He's someone they would use, I think, but, like, maybe not right away. Maybe for a more specific use. And then also the other sort of wild card, and I wanted to bring this up because it was just funny. So the first spring game was Sunday, and the Dodgers were one out away from or four outs away, I guess, because of the bottom of the inning. But they were close to a tie, and Matt Davidson ruined it, and that non-roster invitee Matt Davidson, by hitting a home run, and they won that game. So then after the game, it was like, hey, you know, just a pretty innocuous question, like, what do you think Davidson provides? He's been like a corner guy, first, third base. He hit 46 home runs in 2017, 2018. The Dodgers just signed him, like, on the day, I believe, camp opened. Anyway, so he's a non-roster invitee. He's going to be 30 from Yucaipa. But so they asked Dave about what's Davidson's role. He's like, yeah, you know, pretty good. Oh, also, he threw a bullpen and he might pitch for us. You're like, what? Like, yeah. So Sunday was, I was actually off Sunday, but like, I saw a couple of tweets about that. Like, oh, Davidson might pitch. Like, what? So it's not that foreign, right? So he actually has pitched in six major league games. He has a 2.84 ERA. Relatively empty position plate ERA, but also all six games were blowouts. And so I went back to listen to the audio, and Roberts was very careful to, like, sort of couch this into, you know, it's to save an arm. If he's on the roster, it would be like, you know, it would basically be in a blowout. And like, if our bullpen's taxed, we could use him, that kind of a thing. And Davidson talked about it a little bit the next day. He had an interesting sort of look at it. He was like, basically, I just view it as another tool I have. He's like, I don't run very fast, but I can pitch. So like, it's just another thing I could do. So I don't think anyone's expecting him to be like the fourth guy out of the bullpen or anything. I just think it's a neat little quirk, but he has to also hit to like make the roster.
Friedman,
so like,
still feeling burned for not getting Ohtani, yeah, wants to.
That, yeah, exactly. And so I like the idea because it's a weird thing. I don't think Davidson has some opt-outs. He didn't say when the dates were. I would assume one of them is before opening day, but like maybe the Dodgers can convince him to stay in the minors until like May or June or whatever. But there's no minors in April, so who knows? Like, he's a possibility, and maybe like the second best possibility. But if I had to pick, I think I would go with McKinstry for the last spot. What about you?
I was leaning toward Noisy. For no particular reason other than the comparisons to Max Muncy and being embarrassed that we missed that last time ago. But I think it'll be interesting to see like if that sort of pecking order of the next man up from last year, where Matt Beatty really was number one the last 2 years. But, you know, didn't have a great year last year, if that alters or not, and McKinstry gets in there. I'm not sure.
Yeah. That's the other thing. So, like, Davidson's right-handed, Noisy's right-handed, McKinstry's left-handed, Beatty's left-handed. So it might just depend on what they want, you know, but yeah, you're right. Like, with assuming there's no DH, as of now there isn't, there's going to be more pinch hitting opportunities, and they were a lot more comfortable using Beatty in that role in 2019. Maybe they, you know, they wouldn't mind having him on the team. So you're going with Noisy then for this?
I think so, but prepared to be wrong. I got to gamble in one spot.
No, that's fine. I'm just sort of noting it.
Oh, so you can make fun of me later.
Obviously. Yeah. So then the other, let's get into the pitching. So we have, there's our 12 position players. We have 10 bullpen players. Now, the other sort of lock I should have listed in my head was Victor Gonzalez.
Hey, it is indeed.
Yeah. So, and then there's probably, so then that brings us to 11. So we need three more pitchers. Now, the caveat here, like, I'll say, so last night, Dustin May pitched. He pitched two innings. I believe Gonsolin pitched an inning the day before. Roberts was asked about, like, you know, if those guys, I think Urias was thrown in there, although I think they view Urias as a starter at this point. Like, but, like, if those guys don't make the rotation, would you be okay covering or carrying them on the roster? And Robert's like, yeah. And he's like, that would be fine. Like, we're going to need to cover innings, especially in the early going. Like, they have four games at Coors to start. You know, and so, and I think the fact that there's no minor league season for a month, maybe, I think it's more likely. So maybe they keep one of them back as like a guy who's stretched out, you know, to stay stretched out. Like, maybe he's pitching 4 to 5 innings every fifth day just to be on schedule in case they need someone. But maybe he could do that while he's on the team, you know, if he's not pitching in relief. So, like, I think May and Gonsolin have excellent shots to be sort of on there. Now, I will note, Gonzalez is the only lefty in our pen right now.
We're in simpatico today, man. This is great. You're literally hitting the notes because we're low on show notes because we wanted to see each other's guesses, and you're hitting every spot I was going to cover. Real quick on before we move on from May and Gonsolin, I just, like, I feel like there's a position, and it's usually starters every year, where it's like the best laid plans. Like,
oh, obviously, yeah.
I just feel like, I don't know, I don't want to comment necessarily on how they both make the roster or what their roles is, but I'm imagining one of them is going to be the fifth starter. I don't know how. I don't know if that's a trade. I don't know if that's an injury. I don't know if that's Urias to the bullpen, whatever. And then one of them is going to be kind of be the Ross Stripling-esque, where somehow he's pitching enough in relief that should he need to make a spot start or just become the fifth starter after another injury or something like that, they're able to do so.
So, what I'm hearing is we basically both have May and Gonsolin on our roster.
I have both, yes.
Okay, so we're really, so now we have one spot. So it's I think it's down to a lefty. So what you basically have now is Scott Alexander, the new guy Alex Vesia, also new guy Garrett Clevenger. Both have pitched one inning. Alexander hasn't pitched yet, to my knowledge. And then, I'm trying to think. I don't have the non-roster guys in front of me. I will pull them up because I forgot. I know there's a few lefties in the non-roster, but I...
Mike Kickham.
James Pazos is probably like the reliever type they would... oops, I have the wrong post open. Okay. So, yeah, James Pazos pitched last night. Any Romero is another lefty. Kickham, I think, is more the starter type. All right, he is a starter. Yep. Let's see. I would say we haven't mentioned – he's not lefty, but we haven't mentioned Jimmy Nelson yet. He's the guy who is a non-roster invitee who Dave Roberts made a point to – mention as one of the 8 Dodgers starters basically right now. So, like, I think, you know, he hasn't pitched yet either, but, like, you know, that's not that big of a deal. But so he's there. Also, we haven't mentioned Brandon Morrow yet. Sort of the inner ride, but also he also hasn't pitched since 2018. So it's hard, like, to count on that, you know, like, so I'm not picking him. He's like a thing who's not, he's not a thing until he's a thing for me. Like, so I don't think I'm going to pick him for the opening roster, even though he very well could make it as long as he's healthy. But he has to show that he's healthy, and he hasn't been able to do that for, like, 3 years. So, like, yeah, so I think what do you think on the lefties? Do you have
I have Alex Vesia written down. I had Morrow and Nelson written down to figure this spot out. And then I thought of the handiness, looked, went, oh, crap.
Right.
And so I'm going with Alex Vesia.
Maybe Morrow's secret is, like, if he just starts throwing with his left hand, he kills
right a lot of miles on it. Like,
yeah. So, so just to be, just so we have another difference, I think I'm going to go, even though I haven't seen him pitch yet. And to my knowledge, he's healthy. I'm just going to go with Scott Alexander here, just so we could have two actual differences. So yeah, I think I like last year it seemed like there weren't that many battles at all. Like to me, like when we did this,
no, not at all.
And so this year, at least there's a little bit more. I mean, and it really comes down to like, they lost in the free agency. They lost Jock. They lost Kike. They lost Baez. And those like those guys took up. You know, they weren't.
And now Ferguson's innings, hurt, they, and they traded.
Right, exactly. Yeah,
they traded Floro and Kolarik. So
yeah, so like there's some room there to like maneuver. So and I think all the guys we mentioned, I think, are going to end up being in the majors at some point. And this is also the usual caveat of opening day roster is just a snapshot of one part of the season. So like, yeah. Hey, I think we did good. I think we're each going to get one of our differences right.
And there's going to be two major things wrong.
Exactly. So we're both going to get like 23 out of 26. That's my reason. Although you already put starter getting injured into the universe. So like we know who to look at when that happens.
And then somehow Josiah Gray is starting opening day. Like that's just how this works.
I have an opening day trivia question for you.
Okay.
Who has made the most opening day starts for the Dodgers?
I'll answer that after this. Who has made the most opening day starts for the Dodgers? Just to clarify, this is any position, right?
Yes.
Starts always throws me off.
Yeah. Now, do you want a hint?
I have two guesses, and then I will take a hint, and I will either tap out because the hint's not helpful at all, or I will make one more guess, and then we're calling it.
Yep.
My first guess is Pee Wee Reese.
He is tied for second
with
14 opening day starts.
All right, my next guess is Gil Hodges.
He is fourth with 13. So you're right here. All you're right. In the ballpark.
I will take my hint.
My hint is going to be that, or it's still going to be, this is a player from Brooklyn.
No.
I will take that. Not the player might not be from Brooklyn, but it's played for Brooklyn.
Sure.
So
man.
I'll say Bill Russell has the most L.A. Dodger opening day starts with 12.
I think I would have guessed an infield member. I'm not sure if I would have. I think I would have said Bill Russell. Man.
In terms of just throwing it out there while you give you more time to guess the pitchers, Kershaw is the most with 8.
Okay,
so. Would have been 9 last year. But
I feel like I will just guess Jackie.
No. Well, just remember. So, okay, this is kind of remarkable because his major league career was only 10 seasons.
Let's see that, man.
But he made 10 opening day.
Yeah,
starts,
yeah. So that's. Like, I did think it was longer. But even if it was longer, it wasn't going to be more than 14. So yeah, I don't know. I'm out tapping out.
Zach Wheat.
No.
No.
For some reason, I also thought he had a shorter career. I don't know why that, but.
He's like the all-time leader in like hits and stuff, and like, so he's 16 games,
okay.
Hall of Famer. Now the other player with 14 was Duke Snider.
Okay.
So yeah, a lot of Brooklyn guys on there. L.A. guys after Russell, Willie Davis with 11, Maury Wills, Mike Socha, and Steve Garvey with 10, Eric Karros, John Roseboro, Ron Fairley, Ron Say. And Roy Campanella with 9. So, yeah, a lot of. Carl Ferrillo with 12.
Zach Wheat was literally the first name I thought of when you told me it was still a Brooklyn guy. And I went, no, it's not Zach Wheat.
Yeah, he's a good longevity guy for these.
The
for
Eric Karros of his day.
Yeah.
All right, Dodgers Rewind.
So, yeah, I didn't get to write about this when I was out, but Stan Williams passed away. Mm. In the last week of February, he was 84. He was a pitcher for the Dodgers, sort of came up. I noted this. So he was signed when the Dodgers were in Brooklyn. And then so right before they, like, switched over to the current system of like AAA, AA, single A. He was in Class B. I believe that was roughly high A at the time, but it was in Newport News. And he struck out 301 batters in his age 18 season. That was the Piedmont League record. The old record was 295 by Johnny Vandermeer, who would go on to pitch back-to-back no-hitters for the Reds. That was also in – that was 1955. That was also the last year of the Piedmont League. They're like, you know what? Stan Williams did this. We're shutting it down. So he won. He was 18-7 that year with a 2.42 ERA. Here's the thing with Stan Williams, though. So he walked, pitched 242 innings, but he walked 158. Like that was sort of his thing. Like he would strike out a lot, but he'd also walk a lot. He didn't make his major league debut until the Dodgers moved to Los Angeles, but he made it in 1958. He pitched in the postseason three times, once with the Dodgers, once with the Yankees, and once with the Twins later on. 11 career postseason innings, zero runs allowed. So cool, good for him. All of that was in relief. Now, he was mostly a starter early in his career, then he was a reliever later. With the Dodgers, he was mostly a starter, but in the 59 World Series, he pitched the final two innings of Game 5. Dodgers were up 3-1 in the series at this point. They were down 1-0, though, in Game 5. Now, Williams, had the Dodgers rallied, could have been the winner in what would have been the championship clincher. They loaded the bases in the bottom of the eighth with one out, but Carl Furillo, who had 12 opening day starts, he popped out to third base, and then Don Zimmer flew out to end the rally. So then the White Sox won, and then the Dodgers waited till Game 6 to clinch it. So that was Stan Williams' only appearance in the 59 World Series. Now, the Dodgers were also in a pair of best-of-three NL playoffs in 59 and 62 that Stan Williams pitched in. He pitched three scoreless innings against the Braves in extra innings, so 10th, 11th, and 12th in the second of three games against the Braves. The Dodgers won that on a walk-off to win the pennant, so Stan Williams got the pennant-winning win. That was cool. Now, he blew saves in back-to-back games in 1962 against the Giants. Now, the Dodgers actually won the second of those games, and his blown save was more of a technical game because he entered in a rough spot. It was first and third, one out. The Dodgers were up a run, and he got like a fly out to allow the run. So that it was like a technical blown save, even though it wasn't. The paper the next day like called him a hero, the hero of Game 2, because he ended up pitching like an inning and two thirds. But he did not pitch well in Game 3. The Dodgers were ahead. Like everyone talks about 1951 as the Dodgers like big, like blowing it playoff to the Giants, but 62, man, they're up 4-2 in the ninth, you know, three outs away from winning the pennant. Stan Roebuck came in. He only retired one of five batters, so it's 4-3 when Stan Williams entered, but it's bases loaded, one out, and then he went sack fly to tie the game, wild pitch, and then intentional walk, and then walked it a run. The Dodgers lost 6-4. So now there's a thing in the LA Times the next day. It said Alston criticized for picking Williams. They said now they said Williams was the last man he should have picked because Stan always has trouble keeping the ball low. He should have brought in someone who could have forced Cepeda to hit the ball on the ground. The whisper spread like wildfire in the press box that Alston would be through after this season. And then the quote was, Walter O'Malley won't be able to afford to come back with him, ran the grapevine gossip. He'll need someone to keep up the interest in his new stadium. I will point out that Walter Alston managed the next 14 seasons for the Dodgers. So, and also, they won the World Series in two of the next three seasons and went to three of the next four World Series. So perhaps that was a little bit ill-founded criticism or just didn't come to pass. So sometimes the best moves are the ones you don't make. Now, Stan Williams, he eventually was traded to the Yankees after that. So those two blown saves were his last two games as a Dodger. But he struck out 205 batters in 1962. At the time, he was just the eighth Dodgers pitcher with 200 strikeouts in a season.
Uh-huh.
How many of the other seven can you name?
24 years before I was born. Very few. I was thinking about this. Is like when you think of the Dodgers, you think of sort of Dodgers as a legacy. You think of Boys of Summer. You think of Brooklyn. You also think a team sort of storied with storied pitching. And yet there's not a lot of overlap for that in my head. I know plenty of our listeners and other fans know more than me. I have two names and then I have to tap out. Don Drysdale.
That is correct. He, I'm looking here. I'm just trying to get the exact date. So 62, Drysdale struck out over 200. 59 and 60, he also did. I'm trying to see if he did it before that. I don't. Yeah, those are the three. So he did it then. Yes.
Nuke.
Oh. This is a tough list. It's a long list, and I'm going through it. Negative.
Huh. Well,
he won a Cy Young, didn't? So you don't have any other guesses?
Is it too early for Koufax? Is it not too early for Koufax?
Since you said the name, it is not too early for Sandy Koufax. He struck out 269 batters in 1961, which was a team record at the time, breaking. Do you have any other guesses?
I'll go for it.
So he broke Dazzy Vance's record of 262 in 1924.
I'm just going to, anytime there's a pitching record, I'm going to say Dazzy Vance. Anytime there's a header, I'm going to say Zach Wheat. This is like three times in a row with those two names. I think I dismiss, and then I move on with my life, and I pay the price.
One of the better older names in Dodgers history is Van Lingle Mungo. 1936, he struck out 238. Bill Donovan in 1901 struck out 226. I'm going down the list here because I know there's seven more. Nope, I already said Dazzy Vance.
I'm happy with my hesitance on Koufax because he didn't start the big streak till 63. The way you worded the question,
62 he was really good, but
yeah. No, I'm getting there. But the way you worded the question made me think that if it was Koufax, he would have had to have done it beforehand and not at the same time. So that's why I had hesitance.
So Nap Rucker in 1909 struck out 201.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking here. I may have overshot here. Oh, no. There it is. Adonis Terry is the other one. 1884, 230 strikeouts. I'm going to actually click on him because I'm assuming since this was in the, early era. Guess how many games give me games starts or innings for Adonis Terry in 1884.
50 no more than that 50 starts.
Do you have an innings guess?
312.
56 games.
Okay.
55 starts. Uh-huh. But my favorite, 54 complete games. 476 innings. Okay. So I'm looking here. He averaged 8.5 innings per game. And that was a terrible Brooklyn team. He was 19-35 as he had, so 55 starts, he got 54 decisions. That's amazing. He had a 93 ERA plus.
How did I not a little guess below Dazzy average. Vance? I'm very upset with myself still.
Yeah. Well, you should be. It was no, I'm just kidding. It was all right. Like those, that's fine. Some of those names, like you shouldn't. No one's going to guess Nap Rucker or Bill Donovan or whatever. So like,
I think the timing line of Koufax, I had just slightly off. I think I was off by a year. Shift everything a year, and that's kind of where my head was at on when the dominance really started. Dunn Newcomb's MVP year only struck out 139. People like me were curious about that. His career best was 164 in 1951. Dang.
Yeah, I'm actually a little surprised he wasn't on there too. It didn't stick out to me that I was like that, at first. that he wasn't on the list until you said it.
Hey, you know what?
Mm.
It's time for
Questions from Crit.
Kenley Jansen is one of the is one of four relief pitchers with a 160 ERA plus or better, strikeout rate of nine or better over nine innings and 300 more saves. Can Eric name the three other pitchers? And I have hints if you need them.
So
I'll let you know this. This happens a lot where you'll ask me a question about Dazzy Vance and I don't know it, and then Craig asks you a question about like modern day era pitchers or hitters, and I know that one. I would have struggled with this one.
So, I think I know two of them.
Okay.
So Craig Kimbrell.
Yep.
And Billy Wagner.
Yep.
Now the other one.
Oof.
I'm struggling with. Man. Okay. So. Wow. So I saw the hint because I pasted the questions into our document here.
So the hint is a multi-time all-star from the mid-aughts to the early 10s, and he had allowed no home runs in 27 postseason innings.
My first thought was like I was going to say Brad Lidge, but then I remembered the Pujols home run, and I was like, well, that's very, very – that was like more than one. So like I will go with another Philly or one-time Philly. I will guess Jonathan Papelbon, but otherwise I don't know.
You are correct.
Nice.
Good job. Okay. That was a good question, hard and well-earned victory.
Yeah, I like that one.
Opening day is about 4 weeks away. Would you two prefer to see Clayton Kershaw make another opening day start or be lined up to pitch the home opener the following Friday?
Okay, so just putting the schedule into context here, they start April 1st, four games in Colorado, three games in Oakland, then an off day, and then the home opener is April 9th. That's game number 8. So just generally thinking, the third starter would probably get the home opener. So I think it's time that, like, I think Walker Buehler's earned opening day at this point. And if that's the case, I think you give Kershaw the home opener. I could see them going the other way, though. I would go Buehler opening day. I think opening day is more important than the home opener. Maybe some people disagree with that. But, like, the one thing I'm more sure of, and this is obviously assuming health, is that Trevor Bauer will pitch game two, just be the way that works out. But I think Buehler's earned opening day at this point, given, well, he was also like game one starter in every postseason series except the World Series when, Buehler was didn't have enough rest. So I think he's number one in the pecking order. So I think that's why you give him opening day. And I think Kershaw, you give him the honor of the home opener. I think that's a pretty good way to solve it. It works the other way if they think they just give Kershaw the honor of opening day, then I think you give Buehler the home opener. But I would go Buehler opening day, Kershaw home opener. What do you think?
I like your answer. I'm going really hypothetical. I'm going to like rant here a little bit. It's a bummer. I get why, sort of, that the home opener is. I would almost rather have no fans than limited fans. If I was I assume that, are they going to do the ring ceremony?
I don't know.
Are they going to wait for a full crowd? That's the kind of stuff that's going on in my head is like,
I will ask on that because that's a good question.
Because yeah,
I would imagine they do the ring ceremony, but
yeah, I would imagine it feels weird to delay it. But at the same time, yeah. like I want the full capacity crowd, you know, cheering for a gazillion. And like, obviously I don't actually want that this year. I am not a mask cheerer there, but like,
I was going to say you could probably go to Texas and see a Rangers or Astros game and get that.
No, but that's in my dream world. That's what I want. And it's a bummer that that cannot be done safely. So logistically, rationally, I agree with you though. Everything you said, plus one.
Yeah. Nice.
Anthony Rizzo, Chris Bryant, and Javier Baez, welcome to Cubs Talk, have a combined total of 76.9 BWAR in their time with the Cubs. As the potential free agents get ready to play perhaps the last season for their last season for the Cubs, I'm asking each of you to choose one of these three options for these players. Extension, or signed as a free agent, traded, or signed as a free agent for another team.
Hmm. Okay, so I think Chris Bryant gets traded in season.
What are the Cubs doing? Like, I don't know. Like they what? I don't understand that these are the moves my beloved Indiana Pacers would make.
Right. Just like... So I do think that they're like, the division's bad enough to where maybe they don't end up trading anyone. But my just gut feeling, and I don't want to put that much thought into this, is that Chris Bryant gets traded. Rizzo heads elsewhere and they re-sign Javi Baez.
I'm going to say Rizzo stays and the other two are traded, but again, like, it doesn't, like, or go as free agents if they actually try for this year. But I don't understand what the Cubs are doing, so I have a very hard time. And that's not like, oh, they're being dumb. I just, you know, maybe they are, but it's more so that, like, are you trying to lose? Are you trying to punt? Are you trying to just reset 1 year? The Darvish trade just didn't make any sense to me, especially given the return of like, we don't want to pay a lot of money, but we also kind of want to compete, but we kind of want to punt a few years. I don't know. I imagine we'll have a really good idea of that by the time next year rolls around. So, I'll stick with my guess, though. A couple of trades.
Yeah.
One thing we found out this past month is that Clayton Kershaw used the same glove in his games from 08 to 2020. Do you recall the first baseball glove you each owned, and if it was signed... Do you remember that player? Mine was a Willie Mays McGregor model. Mine was a brown Rawlings, and it was not signed.
Yeah, I know I've had like a signed glove. I don't remember who signed it. I'm looking. The one that I remember was Mizuno at some point. I don't think that was first. I have a Little League, couple Little League pictures on my phone for some reason of me. And it's a Wilson glove. And I think that was probably first. I don't know if you could see this. I'm putting it up so you could possibly see it.
Oh.
I think it was Wilson. I don't remember that being signed. I mean, it was a pretty crappy glove, to be honest, but.
And that might not have been my first glove, but it's the first glove I remember, so.
Yeah, I think I had a Rawlings at one point that was signed, and into like high school and college, I had a black Rawlings glove that was like decent, and I somehow like lost it.
Well, my Rawlings glove was signed by Mr. Rawlings.
Nice.
Choose your favorite microwave or toast and oven treats between Hot Pockets, French bread pizza, the classic burrito, or as another treat from the freezer that you remember heating up in those appliances.
Oh, man.
Number one, Celeste Solo Pizzas. Number two, Bagel Bites. Number three, French bread, Stover's French bread pizzas. Those are the holy trinity of microwave treats for me.
Those are all great. The Celeste are great. Like they're at, you know, I would say at most $1.25.
Yeah. Like frequently on sale $10, and at that quantity, they know their audience, exactly. Which is me and hungry
and. Look, I grew up on Stouffer's French bread pizzas. They were great. Now, I think I had Totino's pizza rolls more than Bagel Bites, but both were excellent. So I would probably put pizza rolls ahead of bagel bites. Now, in recent years, I've probably had more... Oh, man. I think I've had more microwave burritos than Hot Pockets, but it's close. So there's a couple things, right? So the Tina's Frozen are like the ones that are literally like 25 or 30 cents, especially when they're on sale. But I like going a little fancy on this, and there's the ones, depending, like Smart and Final has one. But then I forgot, I can't think of the dang brand. They're essentially a dollar, right? And so you splurge for the dollar, and then those tend to be a little bit better, or at least the constitution holds up a little more, like it doesn't fall apart. But yeah, those are great. And then the Hot Pockets are what they are. Like, they're fine. I've in recent years, I've grown to like the they have a pretzel breaded Hot Pocket. Different kinds, but like, yeah, like those are nice little classics to like just have in reserve, like as a quickie decision. But yeah, those Celeste like little mini pizzas are great. Now there's I will get whatever's on sale, like if it's like whatever, like Kroger or Stater Brothers or whatever the brand is, like if it's the home brand, like I'll just get that if that's the one on sale. But like those are pretty classic. Now that said, I usually would get if I get a frozen pizza, I will more than likely get a larger one, like a full size one, and then just make it and either eat half at a time or the whole thing because whatever. But like, but though I would like Red Baron is my sort of go-to for that. It also like a cost and quality thing. But yeah, you hit the nail on the head. The Celeste are wonderful.
They're really hard to find out here. I have found them before, but they do not have the ubiquitous that they do in LA. So it's
now
literally in and out, and then go to the grocery store and get a few Celeste pizzas are on my list whenever I'm back home.
Look, that's the thing. If you're like, hey, I have $20 and I want to eat for a week, what do I do? You have to have a lot of Celeste pizza. If you want to go out, you could get like you could also get go to the Taco Nights at Del Taco, the 2 for 99 cent tacos at Jack in the Box, and then you're golden at that point. So yeah.
And cheap, terrible food. Body thanks you for it.
Yeah, exactly. It's just wonderful stuff. I love it.
Well, I'm excited for our predictions to be somehow completely incorrect by this time next week. We can talk about it then.
I will just point out, so as of now, Clayton Kershaw hasn't pitched yet. He could pitch as early as Friday. It's either going to be a bullpen, or I'm sorry, throwing to live hitters or pitching in a game Friday. We'll find out soon. David Price hasn't pitched yet either. He's probably in the mix around that time. So, like, you know, and it's like until you're seen, it doesn't really count yet. So, like, all these little scenarios, who knows what's going to happen? But like you said, I think we pretty much nailed it. So we did a good job. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will talk to you next week when I'm sure six of our guesses are already going to be wrong. So thanks for listening, everybody.